The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
And I think New Yorkers should think well past Trump, whether he's president or not, or whether this attorney general is gone in 4 years or not, it's irrelevant. This is case setting against the American brand. This is an assault on what we believe to be core. And I find it extraordinary. I think it's very troubling. It has absolutely nothing to do with Donald Trump at this point, in my view. This is an attack on America. The whole world is watching, and everybody's waiting for one thing we haven't got yet: adult supervision. Where is it? Where are the adults in this crazy narrative? Certainly there's got to be adult supervision at some point. And I understand, you know, the war going on here and all the political yada yada, woof woof woof, but we need an adult in the room now. This is the United States of America under siege.
America under siege. That's the Shark Tank guy, Kevin O'Leary, on with Fox News yesterday, telling you what we've been telling you for a number of years now. He's talking specifically about Letitia James's attack on Donald Trump, using the lawfare in New York to fine Donald Trump $500 million. It's not just an attack on Trump, says O'Leary. This is an attack on America. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Lots and lots to get to. Of course, you can get to the live video stream of this show at trumpetdaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to rumble.com/live. Lots to cover on the immigration invasion. In fact, before we even get into it, I just want to draw attention to these last two issues of the Trumpet magazine. You've got the March issue, I believe it was, March on unprotected, and really just taking a deep dive into the sickness in Israel, the sickness in America. So many sick people that are just deranged, and you see examples of it on this show nearly every day. Satan's the god of this world. He has surcharged the air with his attitudes and moods. You see it everywhere. That's the March issue. And then this latest one, invasion. That's what's happening. It's so obvious it's intentional. It's so obvious that it's part of the fundamental transformation. And we'll bring the receipts today. You can hear it for yourself on these clips. Lawlessness by design. That's on page 3 in the latest issue of the Trumpet magazine. You could get to the PDF even now at our website, thetrumpet.com. But if you'd like to subscribe, if you'd like a free 1-year subscription, there's no cost or obligation. You can receive tomorrow's news today right in your mailbox every month. Just call our operators and request a free 1-year subscription to The Trumpet, the 800 number. It's 1-866-930-3024. So the New York Post, it says, Shark Tank star Kevin O'Leary has blasted the $454 million bond. I think it's like $112,000. I had the story yesterday. We didn't get through the detail, but $112,000 in interest being charged every day. And Tish James now is threatening to seize the properties of Donald Trump. I mean, this is just outrageous. It's an attack on America. The investor railed against the penalty after Trump's attorneys revealed in court papers earlier this week that the ex-president hasn't been able to secure the massive bond. He's got to secure this bond so that he can continue on to just appeal this nonsense, to fight back against this attack. It says here, raising the chances that New York Attorney General Letitia James will move to seize some of his prized Big Apple properties. This is a third world dictatorship. This is Banana Republic stuff. This is what goes on when you go up against, you know, a dictator in some third world country. They just put you in prison. They seize your assets. They destroy you. And there, you know, Jesse's got a pretty good, he had a pretty good segment last night about how the deep state is preparing for war. The lawfare, I mean, I guess this goes forward in Manhattan, but everywhere else it seems like it's breaking down, as we've been covering. But they're preparing for war. You've got Stephen A. Smith, he's not exactly conservative, but even he's coming out saying these attacks on Donald Trump, they're not working. They're just not working. And then the vote, the minority vote, Latinos, African Americans, it's alarming. Even CNN says this is alarming. How many of them are going over for Trump? It says here, this is the United States of America under siege, O'Leary said during a Tuesday appearance on Fox News. Here's one more bit from O'Leary's interview or his discussion there with Fox, clip one.
I don't think it's case by Trump at all anymore. I think people should be thinking about the policy being put in place here, the competitiveness of New York State versus other U.S. states, but more importantly, the message about the American brand. You think about America, the reason this is the number one economy on earth is that we have laws and we have due process and we have property rights. It attracts foreign capital from all around the world. All of that is being shaken to the core here. The concept of seizing assets in 30 days on a bond number that's never been issued. No insurance bond company's ever issued anything near this. So there was no chance it was going to happen. And only giving 30 days notice and time. That's a really bad message.
30 days notice. You got to come up with $500 million. Who has that on hand? And then, as he says, insurance companies, they've never issued a bond that a fine that big. $500 million. Lawfare. Who's behind all this? Who's funding all this? This is from the National Pulse. Here again, I'll refer you to Unprotected, the March issue of the Trumpet magazine. The problem is far bigger than Epstein, says one of the subheads. Our OnlyFans culture, the churches have been infiltrated. Sickness from head to toe. The National Pulse says LinkedIn billionaire and Epstein Island visitor Reid Hoffman, a mega donor to the Democrats. And then he's a donor to the Democrats, to Nikki Haley, to E. Jean Carroll. I mean, Haley's since bowed out, but he was funding her in large part. The guy that liked to go down to Epstein Island, the billionaire Democrat donor, he funded E. Jean Carroll's case and the legal defense of Russia hoaxers, Fusion GPS, has also donated in large sums to the Midas Touch Network, founded by the three Mises brothers, Ben, Brett, and Jordy. The far-left media organization helped popularize the bloodbath hoax. They got the bloodbath hoax. It was off and running this past weekend. We've talked about that earlier this week. Against Donald Trump, it says, Midas Touch intentionally omitted that Trump was referring to an economic bloodbath for the auto industry in his speech in Ohio on Saturday, and you've got all these deranged commentators out saying, well, you never talk about the auto industry and use the word bloodbath. It just never happens. These people that use the word bloodbath for everything. And then Donald Trump uses it. And of course, he wants violence. He wants a violent overthrow of the United States government. It's like they're putting, who was it, Jesse? They've put all their hoaxes into one big pot. We'll come to him in just a second. It says here, the group has the support of many high-profile celebrities and political figures, this Midas group. It says here, the brothers have employed a team of hardline Never Trump activists to masquerade as journalists for their website, which began its life as a Democratic PAC. Now the national polls can reveal that one of the men who helped them get it off the ground was none other than Epstein-linked billionaire Reid Hoffman, who also bankrolled the E. Jean Carroll case against Donald Trump and threw cash at Nikki Haley prior to her failed political campaign. These are some sick people that are out there promoting and funding more sick people to just try to destroy Trump. But as you heard from O'Leary there at the top, this is an attack on America. That's what we're seeing. Listen to this from Jesse Waters' program just last night. And again, you'll recall the article in the New York Times from earlier this week talking about how great the deep state is. Yeah, the deep state is wonderful. We got to protect our bureaucrats. Listen to Jesse as he talks about what the deep state is preparing for. And keep in mind, here again, to plug the trumpet, keep in mind that January issue of the Trumpet magazine, ready for war. I mean, every single issue we've put out this year, just four of them thus far, look at how timely they've been. Look at how hard-hitting the message is. Look at tomorrow's news today. If you're subscribing to The Trumpet, here's clip 11.
The deep state's telegraphing what they're going to do. Run a PR campaign saying we should rally around the deep state because they're good old American public servants who eat cereal and exercise just like you. And on the same day, send a guy behind the CIA letter to put a big fat target on Trump's back. Because when you're the CIA and you say something's a threat, what do you think the CIA is trained to do about threats? Just getting started. Not only is Trump a security threat, he's an unstable psychopath, they say. So now they've established a national security threat, foreign blackmail, and mental instability. And to make the Trump presidency even more dangerous, they warn of an impending American genocide if he isn't stopped.
He's going to come after immigrants. He's going to come after people of color. He was locking babies in cages as a matter of formal policy. He banned Muslim folks in this country as his first act as president. He will do that, and he will do even more. This is a man who likes words like poison, like American carnage, like bloodbath. Those are not metaphors. That is the intellectual and ideological universe in which he lives. One of violence, one of decay, one of death, and that is what he hopes to produce.
We're witnessing the beginning of another coup, a dark and dangerous chapter in America's here. They're combining the dictator on day one hoax with the bloodbath hoax to justify stopping Trump by any means necessary. The deep state's preparing for war.
Preparing for war. War in 24, we keep saying. Ready for war. January issue of The Trumpet. Another coup. Look at what they were willing to do to persecute and go after Trump in 2016, and then all through his presidency, and then even after his presidency. Certainly once he announced that he was going to run for election again. Everyone knows what's coming. And the Democrats, these radical, deranged, and sick people, they're out there talking about how Trump's going to trigger war, Trump's going to trigger violence. They keep talking about war and violence because they're projecting what it is they're going to do if they lose. They're not going to just sit back and let Donald Trump come back into office. They'll do anything they can to destroy him. And their track record, their fruits, prove it. That article, it turns out the deep state is actually kind of awesome. I mean, that almost seems like a Babylon Bee headline. This is the New York Times. The deep state is awesome. They used to deny that it even existed. It says, when we hear deep state, instead of recoiling, we should rally. We should think about the workers otherwise known as our public servants, the everyday superheroes who woke up ready to dedicate their careers and their lives to serving us. Superheroes? You know, one of the guys that they trotted out. I don't know if it was – Jesse had the clip, and I just didn't play all of it because it went a bit long, but it was MSNBC or CNN. They had a CIA guy on TV to tell you how dangerous Donald Trump is, and this CIA guy is the one who recruited the 51 intel officials that signed off saying that the Hunter laptop was Russian disinformation. So he's a liar, in other words. And yet he's in the intel community. And like Jesse points out, I mean, if the CIA is to tell you this is a national security threat, Donald Trump, what are they prepared to do to, quote unquote, save their country, to save the deep state as they know it? These are frightening scenarios that are beginning to unfold. We know a little bit about what's going to happen because of Bible prophecy. God says he's going to intervene to save America, even if temporarily, to save America, to save Israel by the hand of Jeroboam. All that and more discussed in this powerful, powerful book, America Under Attack. You heard it in the cold open. Kevin O'Leary. This is America under siege. This is America under attack. They're going after the American brand. They're trying to fundamentally transform the United States of America. How about that? Set up this massive target and put it on Donald Trump's back. You've got to do anything that you can to stop this man. Listen to this exchange from MSNBC, clip 4.
Donald Trump is not acting like a normal politician who expects to win or is even trying to win. He doesn't need to win more votes. He just needs to be in the ballpark because he's laid the groundwork for you not believing that he would have lost the election.
Yeah, yeah. It's also important in this speech, if we're talking about context, that at least 9 times he himself invokes the big lie.
Correct.
And in doing that, he embraces the people around him in this alternative reality. And then in alternative reality, it's not the number of votes that's going to count. It's the feeling of having won that's going to count. And that's why we have to understand his words as preparation for a November 24 insurrection. That's what he's after. And we've got 6 or 7 months to explain to Americans that this is the bloodbath candidate, that what he's trying to do is get close enough and threaten violence. There are a lot of undecided voters out there, maybe folks not here in New York, but a lot of folks out there who haven't thought about this stuff yet. But when they hear what he's going to try to do, it will matter to them.
Talk about violence over and over and over again. Bloodbath, violence, bloodbath, violence. And then when Trump wins, presuming that's how it rolls out here in the next few months, we'll see what the twists and turns will be like. But when Trump wins, then these insurrectionists will trigger violence and then blame Trump. Trump's the insurrectionist. Listen to his words. I mean, 9 times he said the election was stolen. 9. He uses the word bloodbath. So do we, but leave that aside. He used bloodbath talking about automobiles. They're going to trigger it themselves at some point and then say, hey, we told you so. It's like Jesse said at the top of that segment, at the top of that clip, they're telegraphing what it is that they're going to do. This latest issue of the trumpet, the invasion one, my father's personal right at the front of the issue. Can America avoid a second civil war? Can we avoid a second civil war? Look at where we're headed. Look at the direction we're on. It says here, how much do Americans love Abraham Lincoln? He was one of the greatest, if not the greatest, of the American presidents. We are accountable for his history. In many ways, he's a witness against us. The only way to avoid suffering on a scale even greater than that of the Civil War is to look to the God that Lincoln invoked and to repent. That's the only way that we can avoid just a catastrophic explosion of violence, is by looking to the God that Abraham Lincoln invoked. Are we willing to do that? There are prophecies, as I just said, showing that God is going to intervene and save America temporarily by the hand of Jeroboam. But there are no prophecies that speak of a nationwide repentance or turn to God. Well, instead, it talks about sickness from head to toe, like in Isaiah 1 and Isaiah 3. Again, go back to that. Go back to that March issue, this year's March issue of the Trumpet magazine. The 800 number, if you haven't subscribed, 1-866-930-3024. When we come back, we'll delve into the invasion at the southern border. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily news, Bible prophecy. See the connection on the Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need the Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need the Trumpet Daily. Only the Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to trumpetdaily.com.
This is the election right here in a nutshell. This border, this is an invasion. And then on top of this new decision from a district judge yesterday, a district court judge stating about the they are allowed to have weapons. You know, if you have 10 million people coming to your country and now they can have the right to bear arms. Mm. Now we've got an armed potential. What else can we call it but an invasion?
Yeah, I mean, what you're referring to is an Obama-appointed Illinois judge ruling that illegal immigrants can own a firearm and carry a firearm. The judge saying that a federal prohibition on illegal migrants owning firearms is unconstitutional when applied to a non-citizen who has never been convicted of a violent crime. This is incredible, Adam. To me, this seems like insanity.
It is insanity. It's an Obama judge ruling that illegal immigrants, they come into the country illegally, they can now carry firearms. These people who want to take away the guns that ordinary American citizens lawfully have, their Second Amendment rights. And now here comes these judges saying, sure, let's let them carry guns too. How about that? Yesterday, the Supreme Court ruled that Texas, while it's waiting for one of its cases on this illegal onslaught, this invasion, while it's waiting for an appeal, it can go ahead and deport these people coming in illegally. Listen to this, though, as CBS describes it. The Supreme Court on Tuesday gave Texas officials permission to jail and prosecute migrants suspected of coming or crossing the U.S. southern border without authorization, greenlighting the enforcement of a state immigration law known as SB 4 that the Biden administration has called unconstitutional. So guess who Texas is fighting against? Well, that would be the Jobama people, the DOJ, the Dear Leaders DOJ, the deep state. You know, the deep state, that's awesome. They're fighting Texas in court to try to prevent them from penalizing illegal immigrants at all. Nothing. It says denying a request from the Justice Department. The high court allowed the controversial Texas law, one of Governor Greg Abbott's signature immigration policies, to take effect while the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit considers the measure's legality. So you see whose side each group is on, Texas and the federal government. The federal government is fighting to keep the doors wide open so that anyone can come in. And then you've got Obama judges saying, give them firearms as well. It's insanity. Of course it's insanity. There's a strategy at play here. Politically, you want to come in, flood these, even these deep, dark blue districts so that you can up the numbers in the census. That happens every 10 years. And if you do that, you get more congressional seats. It could affect the Electoral College. Even if these illegals can't technically vote until they become citizens, they would, of course, Democrats would prefer to do that as well. Just invite 10 million in and let it change the political landscape forever so that we can stay in power forever, so we can have one-party rule forever. Elon Musk, he sat down with somewhat of a contentious exchange, although in this clip he appears to be very composed. But listen to him and then ask yourself, as he's basically explaining the strategy at play here, ask yourself why Don Lemon doesn't understand this better. I mean, he's supposed to be a reporter, right? He's supposed to be a journalist. Move ahead to clip 7.
My understanding is that there would be that the Democrats would lose approximately 20 seats in the House if illegals were not counted in census. And that's also 20 less electoral votes for president. So the illegals absolutely do affect the who controls the House and who controls the presidency. It does not affect the Senate.
Yeah. In blue states, you're talking about. Yes. I don't believe that your information on that is right.
Well done. Let's bring up the information. Okay, here you go, Molly. FoxNews.com. Overall, according to the Federation for American Immigration Reform, there are an estimated 16.8 million illegal immigrants living in the U.S. as of June 23. Therefore, because every House seat represents 761,168 residents on average, the total number of illegal immigrants account for roughly 22 seats in the House, also affects the electoral vote count. So, Don Lemon, there you have it.
It affects the number of House seats and the electoral count. And listen to what this panel went on to discuss. Clip 8. This was Joe Biden's, one of his first actions on the first or second day that he became the fake president. This is clip 8.
So I wonder if this notion of political power had anything to do with Joe Biden's day one priorities, Kevin. NPR, this is, check out the date, January 20th, 2021. So first day in office, Biden ends Trump census policy, ensuring all persons living in U.S. are counted. That would mean illegal immigrants, too. Day one priority.
The first day that he came in as illegitimate president, January 20th, 2021, he changes the laws regarding the census. Every person is counted. Doesn't matter who they are. Doesn't matter if they're a citizen or not. Everyone gets counted. So flood New York City, flood Chicago with hundreds of thousands, and hold on to those congressional seats and influence the count for the Electoral College. It's all by design, isn't it? It's all part of the strategy. It's all part of the fundamental transformation. They can't maintain their permanent grip on power without this. That's how important it is. You look at what they did in 2021 and what they're continuing to do. They don't want to stop it. They don't want to slow it down. They want to speed it up. They're flying them in. It's not just letting them in at the southern border. They're flying hundreds of thousands of illegals in. Joe Obama. The deep state, isn't the deep state awesome? The New York Times told us so. The deep state sure is awesome. Listen to this last bit from, this is over at Fox Business, number 6.
It is crazy. And if you think about the politics of this, who is supporting this? There aren't that many Democrats out there that are really calling for an open border and calling for giving guns to migrants, you know, these things. But the Biden administration are pursuing it so hard. It's a real question. Why are they chasing this so much? It's not popular with anyone. So we're not quite sure why they're after this so desperately.
Well, we have some idea because when the census is done and the census captures all of the people living in a certain region, if there are more people in Democrat-run sanctuary cities, then they'll get more congressional seats. So the congressional Democrats are actually winning on all of this when it comes to the census.
Congressional Democrats are winning on this. You know, the one guy says, it doesn't even make sense. Why would they do this? Well, and Bartiromo says, actually, we do kind of understand. a little bit of why they're doing this. It's because they want to maintain their grip on power. These people are power hungry, mad, deranged, and sick. And they'll do, like my father said in that article from 2018, they'll do anything to maintain their hold on power. And of course, they see that as far as the popular message or the populist message, that really is resonating with just ordinary Americans, you know, law-abiding Americans that have their Second Amendment rights and that are just outraged over what's happening at the southern border and with everything else. The country's going up in flames, right? This was from the Wall Street Journal. Why Democrats are losing their grip on Latino voters. So long as Democrats were viewed as the party of the working class, they could bank on winning large Hispanic majorities. The problem Joe Biden and his party face this year is growing numbers of Hispanics and other non-white working class voters view Democrats as out of touch. Out of touch. I saw this exchange. It was some kind of a hearing, I think, in Chicago. Everyone involved was black. The woman was standing up at the podium complaining about how that all of the funds coming into the city, they're going to the migrants instead of to the citizens or minorities. And then one black gentleman says, well, who'd you vote for in 2021 or 2020? And she admitted it was Biden. And so he said, well, then you're part of the problem. Why did we vote for Biden? Some good questions that a lot of minorities are beginning to rethink. It says here, Democrats carried the Hispanic vote by 38 points in 2016. By 2020, that margin had shrunk to 21 points. And among Hispanic men, it was down to 17 points. It says here, few predict that the GOP will win a majority of Latino votes this November. But these inroads have smart Democrats terrified. Listen to this. On CNN, clip 9.
I want to show you this New York Times Siena College poll that found that both black and Hispanic voters say that Donald Trump's policies have helped them more than Joe Biden's policies by pretty wide margins, especially when you look at Hispanic voters. Is that alarming to you?
She's talking to Hakeem Jeffries. He's the minority leader in the House. Is that alarming? Look at, I mean, these minorities are saying that Trump's policies help them more than Biden's. People are waking up, aren't they? They're beginning to see what's happening, and they're going to be paying attention more this year, an election year, than they were last year or the year before. It says here, although Mr. Trump lost the 2020 election, he managed to reduce the Democrats' advantage among Latinos by 18 points in Wisconsin, 14 in Pennsylvania, and 12 in Arizona, three battleground states that could be pivotal in choosing the next president. So that's why Trump's out there saying we got to get everybody out to vote so that we win in a landslide and we don't get cheated out of another victory. I think it was the Babylon Bee that said, had some headline where Trump used the word landslide, and the pundits said he's calling for literal landslides to cover up cities. Any language that he uses is obviously motivated by hatred and violence. Some conservatives are convinced that Mr. Biden has ignored border security to win more Hispanic votes. If that's true, the strategy doesn't appear to be working and may be having the opposite effect. Joe Obama's looked at this catastrophe, and that's what it is. And they've made the calculation that, look, our hardcore base, forget about the moderates or forget about peeling off any of the Nikki Haley supporters that are never Trump. We've got to please the hardcore communist left, and they want the border to stay wide open, and they want to destroy Trump no matter the cost, no matter what it does to the country. Listen, I mentioned that Stephen A. Smith exchange. He's on with Chris Cuomo, and he's talking about, again, this is a left winger, but I think he's got his finger to the pulse of what's happening in the black community. And that's reflected in some of these remarks. Clip 10.
You don't like the way the media played the Trump bloodbath situation. Why?
Well, first of all, I thought that he was talking about the United States and China and the auto industry. And I thought that they used it as an opportunity to expose and exploit the kind of things that they wanted to about Donald Trump. Fair enough. The problem is that he's kicking their tail. I mean, the guy's got 4 indictments, 91 counts against him. He's been impeached twice. He just lost a civil case where he was ordered to pay in excess of $400 million. And he keeps gaining campaign dollars. He keeps gaining momentum. And somehow, some way, they keep using the same old tactics. That was really my point. It's not working. It's not being effective. He's literally kicking their butts. And they've got to get their act together and find a different strategy.
The strategy is not working, at least not the lawfare strategy. They're preparing for war. The deep state is preparing for war. They're not going to stop with the end of the lawfare that's exploding in their faces. But how, again, how influential is someone like this that people see on the sports channels every day coming out with views like this? It's not working. They better come up with a different strategy. So says this sports reporter. When we come back, we'll continue our study through some of the powerful examples of character and leadership in the book of Daniel. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
Yesterday, we were talking about Daniel and his three friends and just how educated they were. They received a royal education. And of course, these were men of character and faith, young men, teenagers, in fact, that obeyed God's laws, that trusted God in faith. And that they knew more when it came down to wisdom and understanding than all the mighty men of Babylon. This verse in Ecclesiastes 7, I gave you this yesterday. Verse 19 of that chapter says, "Wisdom strengthens the wise more than 10 mighty men which are in the city." And that's basically what the Babylonian king concluded. At the end of Daniel 1, he looked at these four individuals and said, wow, these guys really know their stuff. These are really well-educated individuals. These are God-fearing men, young men at that. Let's look at the example in chapter 3 of these three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in particular. Verse 1, it says, "Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 80 cubits, and the breadth thereof 6 cubits, and he set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon." So this is probably 20 years on or so. The men are now, you know, older, middle-aged men, I suppose. Verse 4, it says, "Then an herald cried aloud, 'To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, the flute, the harp, all these instruments, and whoso falls not down and worships shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. So you've heard this story before. What a testimony to faith that these men had in their God, the great creator God. My father writes, this is actually Mr. Armstrong, sorry, it's from the What is Faith booklet. But Mr. Armstrong said, had you been in their place, speaking of these three men, what would you have done? Would you not have said, well, I have to bow down to this image. I have to do it or I'm going to get killed. And perhaps you would have excused yourself by reasoning thus. I don't think God would be fair if he punished me for this when he knows I'm forced to do it. Anyway, he tells us to be subject to the power of the state. Yes, it's easy to use reason to excuse disobedience to God. How easy is it to excuse disobedience, to use human reasoning, to get those human reasoning wheels a-turning, and to think, well, surely God would understand this little act of disobedience. Surely he can understand why I'd have to compromise on this. It says, but God is not looking for chances to punish us, but rather for opportunities to save us through faith, to save us from the folly of sin and the sad consequences of our own acts that our own acts impose. He's trying to rescue us. I got into this morning in Doctrines. I mean, Mr. Armstrong wrote an article back in 1980 saying that, you know, there's all kinds of worries and fears and heartaches that we're carrying around with us that we don't have to. If we would just put ourselves, our lives in God's hands and let him fight our battles, that doesn't mean we do nothing. We have to go forward with Christ. We have to have a fighting spirit. We have to be well educated like Daniel and his three friends. We have to obey the laws of God. But it says in Hebrews that Jesus is the author and the finisher of our salvation. He's where it all begins with that sacrifice, the lamb slain from the foundation of the world. But then as Romans 5:10 brings out, it's his life by which we're saved. Saved by his life. Saved by the living Christ. Not the one that's, well, generally represented as just dead and hanging on a cross. Jesus Christ lives. God raised Jesus Christ from the dead. What's he doing? Where is he? What's been going on for the last 2,000 years? Well, the Bible reveals a lot about that as well. I can't get into all of these studies at once, but the Bible says he's right there at the right hand of God, that he's our intercessor, interceding on our behalf. He's our advocate when we sin. 1 John 2 and verse 1. He's our great high priest. He's the head of the church. He's our husband. And so we look to Christ, the living Christ. We claim that sacrifice upon repentance and faith. Of course. But that's not where the plan of God ends. With respect to God's annual festivals, it starts with Passover, and then it goes on to all the rest, and you've got a complete picture of what God is doing, God's purpose here below, God's purpose for man, what he's doing through the church now, and then eventually the whole world. It's awesome. It's mind-staggering, really, when you think about this plan, this purpose. God reproducing himself. Where's the book? Mystery of the Ages. There you go. Nothing summarizes the extent of this purpose and plan quite like this book, written by Herbert Armstrong in the last year of his life. And we fought for it in court for 6 years so that we could freely distribute it. No cost, no obligation. Verse 8. This is verse 8 of chapter 3 in Daniel. It says, wherefore at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. They spoke and said to the king, King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. So here come these these members of the court filled with jealous rage and envy. Verse 11, it says, "And whoso falls not down and worships, that he should be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace, there are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego." These men had been promoted, and the Babylonian leaders didn't like it. It says, "These men, O king, have not regarded you. They serve not your gods, nor worship the golden image which you have set up." They're not bowing down before your idols. In my father's book, Daniel unlocks Revelation. He says, of course we will have trials, but that shouldn't diminish our love for God, who gives us those trials to increase our love. After all, he's right there in the fiery furnace with us. One like the Son of God. We'll get to that in just a second. But it says further on, "To endure trials, you must see God behind them. You won't get through a fiery furnace trial without this understanding." Now, let's carry on with the history here. Verse 13, it says, "Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego." Daniel's not mentioned in this passage, by the way. He's probably off on assignment somewhere. But anyway, these three. "Then they brought these men before the king." Verse 14, "Nebuchadnezzar spoke and said to them, 'Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not you serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Is this true? You're not submitting to or bowing down before my gods?'" Verse 15, it says, "Now if you be ready, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, the flute, all the instruments again, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made, well, but if you worship not, you shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands?" Why, that's quite the taunt. Here's Nebuchadnezzar practically mocking the God of these three men. Verse 16, "Then answered the king and said," this is in Amplified, "O Nebuchadnezzar," they answered the king and said, "O Nebuchadnezzar, it is not even necessary for us to answer you on this point." The King James wording is a little bit awkward, but what it means there is, hey, we don't even need to think about this one. This is an easy one. You're asking us to bow down before a pagan idol? Can't do it. Cannot do it. Will not do it. In my father's booklet on Daniel, it says, "It takes a lot of faith to put your life into God's hands, particularly when you are facing and even thrown into a fiery furnace or a den of lions." Yet that is the whole theme or motif of Daniel. God is my judge. That's what the name Daniel means, right? We went through that yesterday. God is my judge. In every chapter, God promises vindication. He assures us that he will deliver his people if we are faithful. This book is also filled with most impressive examples of how God vindicates his people in trial. You see, like I said yesterday, it's not just a book filled with prophecy. It's got a lot of prophecy too. But it shows us how God vindicates his people in trial and testing. God is our judge. God fulfills his promises. God delivers us from trials, even fiery trials. Verse 17, it says, if it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. Verse 18, but if not, be it known unto you, O king, that we will not serve your gods, nor worship the golden image which you have set up. Now, again, as Mr. Armstrong said, you can think of 1,000 ways to justify, you know, a little compromise here. But notice even how they word it in verse 18. In verse 17, they say, our God can deliver us from a fiery furnace. And then they added to that, but even if he doesn't, we're not going to bow down before a pagan idol. This is not going to happen. I mean, that's the kind of sure faith. That's a firm foundation on which true religion rests. No compromise. If God says it, then that's the final answer. God is our judge, after all. Not Nebuchadnezzar. Not some radical, you know, deranged leader. In the Daniel booklet, it says, God says this book is for the end time. He had this recorded in his word for us today. It's an end time prophecy for the people of God. We need to learn this invaluable lesson about dealing with trials. There's no way to tell what the future holds for each of us. See, we need to strengthen our faith with God's help. We need to pray as the disciples did there in Luke 18, I think it was. Increase our faith, particularly in these trying times that we're living through. It says in verse 20, and he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind these three, to cast them into the fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, their hats, and other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Verse 22 says, therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the Babylonians that came near to the edge of this fiery furnace. The heat from it slew them. They died. But notice who didn't. Verse 23, and these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down, bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished and rose up in haste and spoke and said to his counselors, did not we cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? And they answered and said unto the king, true, O king. And he answered and said, lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. We need to have the kind of faith that will take us right through trials such as this. Some, as I say, could have said, well, look, I'll go right up to the edge of the furnace, but then, you know, if God doesn't deliver me right then and there, well, surely I'm going to go ahead and bow down to this pagan king's idol. God actually had them thrust into the furnace, but even the king looked down in there and saw that God was with them right through that. In that prophet, my father's booklet, it says, these three must have believed that they were going to die. Then they were actually thrown in. Surely that would have seemed like the end. It says, Christ wants us to know that we are his family. When we trust him, he will get right into the furnace with us. We must see where he is. This is a test of our faith. We need these tests. They indicate how truly precious we are to God. He's saying, it's okay. I'm right here in the furnace with you. What else matters? See, God is our judge. He's right there with us in the furnace. What an impact this would have had, by the way, on Nebuchadnezzar. I don't have time to read through to the end, but you get to the end of the story, and here again, these three, they're promoted. The antagonists, the persecutors come along, filled with jealous rage and envy. They try to destroy these three, and some of them end up getting destroyed. And then in the end, in a manner or a way that only God could do or perform, these three are actually promoted to higher positions within this Gentile kingdom. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, and we ask that you join us again tomorrow.